This is Amarin's.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hi, and welcome to episode 40. Finally! My name is Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. I call this episode No Way, because that's what I've had recently, No Way to Podcast. Now, I have a lot to go over since I last podcasted, and you have no idea what I've gone through to bring you this episode. I actually recorded an episode this past Wednesday, which was technically still Tuesday in America, so technically I wouldn't have missed two podcast days in a row. The trouble is, our internet connection went down when the episode was only partly uploaded, and I had no way to do anything more. And this was actually after I had trouble recording that episode. I decided to try GarageBand again, and again, I somehow managed to clip the beginning of a segment. So I opened it in Audacity and re-recorded the affected part and left the rest alone. But that, combined with some weird audio dropouts, made me think that maybe I should give up on GarageBand for recording podcasts. It just doesn't seem to work for me. Although, if any podcasters listening to this can tell me what I've been doing wrong, or if you think it's really great, I'd love to hear from you, because I just haven't been able to make it work for myself. Anyway, the next day, at the part-time job, I checked, and because I did have internet access there, I checked and found that only about 16 minutes of the podcast made it, which is more than half, but it would have stopped suddenly in mid-sentence, so I decided not to post the episode, the incomplete episode, as it happens. By the time I got home that evening, I decided, just forget it and start over the next day, which was Friday, because that's a normal podcast day. The only trouble is, our internet connection failed again on Friday morning. Now, we tried to get it sorted that afternoon, to no avail. Saturday, Nigel insisted that our ISP send a technician to the exchange, and they warned us that if the problems with our equipment or the lines to our house, or in our house rather, that we'd be charged. We're like, fine, because we knew that it was not our problem. Well, the technician found that the connection to our house was fine, as was the connection from the exchange to the network, but he couldn't connect the two up. So he switched the port that we were connected to and did some more techie magic, and that was it. And from his perspective, things were perfect. The trouble is that we still had no internet connection. So after Nigel spent at least 45 minutes or so on the phone, the ISP help desk gave up and said they'd have to turn the problem over to the engineers. But the engineers only work Monday to Friday, so our connection won't be back until sometime next week. So at the moment, I'm planning on uploading this from Nigel's sister's house sometime Monday, our time, although that's maybe a bit optimistic, we'll see. I should say that our experience is not typical of people in New Zealand, but it's not uncommon either. See, the lines, the network, and the exchanges are all owned by Telecom New Zealand, which is a foreign-owned company that has spent very little on infrastructure for many years now. The government got sick of waiting for Telecom to work with its competition and mandated that the network be opened up. And Telecom hasn't made that easy. They've failed to cooperate. They've deliberately slowed things down. All sorts of obstructionist things that they've done. Well, recently, we decided to take advantage of this new structure, and we switched our home line to our ISP from Telecom, and suddenly we started having constant trouble with our internet connection. That's not a coincidence. The question, though, is who's at fault? It's either Telecom ignoring problems with the connections of the customers of its competitors, or it's our ISP who's incompetent, and of course both are possible. Our ISP is also foreign-owned, and it's part of a major international telecommunications company, but the internet isn't their core business, so maybe there aren't enough people left in the company who understand the business. It's been sold several times now, and the staff reductions each time, so it's entirely possible that the people who actually knew what to do are gone. At the very least, they've had a rather laid-back attitude, shall we say, toward our difficulties. It seems to us that they automatically assumed that our problems were of our own making. Of course, having the technician go to the exchange proved that that wasn't the case, but getting them to acknowledge that is a whole other matter entirely. At any rate, we'll be demanding credit for the days that the internet wasn't usable, which we're certainly entitled to, And I think we're going to look closely at changing ISPs to one that has a better service record. The government has forced Telecom into structural separation of its business, since it was unwilling to cooperate with competitors. And I'd predict that if the company doesn't change its ways and start cooperating, it's going to be broken up completely. But we'll see. Actually, you know, it's not just our internet connection that's been sick, because for the past couple of weeks, I've been at the tail end of my late winter cold, which I've mentioned in the past, and it just won't go away. I felt really crappy the Friday the 14th, which was supposed to be a recording day, and so I didn't record. The following Sunday, I went with Nigel and his sister to their marae, where they were attending a meeting, and I thought, oh, maybe we can record in the car. But it was raining constantly and noisily, and I was coughing every few minutes, so that wasn't going to happen. So I thought, oh, well, I might as well wait for Tuesday, because again, that's another recording day. But on Tuesday, I just didn't have time for a whole variety of reasons, and that postponed it then until Wednesday. However, one interesting thing happened during that time. On Tuesday evening, we had dinner with fellow blogger and American expat Dawn, and she and her husband were a guest on episode 32. Now, this was the first time I've met another blogger in real life, and it was really weird to meet somebody who I felt I knew really well, but who I didn't actually know at all. But Dawn's great. If you've read her blog or heard her on my podcast, she's pretty much exactly as she is. And hopefully Nigel and I can visit them in Wellington at some stage. Just yesterday, which was Saturday, I'm recording this on Sunday the 23rd, just yesterday, Nigel and I received our voting papers for the local elections, along with, I think it's a 51-page booklet about the candidates. Each candidate supplies a little mini-bio that they obviously write themselves, some better than others. Some of them sound positively illiterate. But anyway, so we've looked over that, but the more that we look at it, the more it looks more confusing and more daunting to choose who to vote for, because we don't know who most of these people are. But I'm going to talk a bit about the elections in another episode, because on October 2nd, we're going to a Meet the Candidates evening, and I hope to have some sound from that. Also going on right now, it's inorganic rubbish collection time in our city. Now, when I lived in Northern Illinois, we called this spring cleanup, where people put everything from their basements and garages and whatnot out by the street, and the government, the local people come around and collect and take it away. Well, not all councils in New Zealand do this, and ours reminds people that whatever they put out will end up in a landfill. Now, this year they also made a change and decided to allow people to go through the rubbish for their own use, provided the piles were kept neat and sanitary. Yeah, right. Anyway, it was still forbidden for businesses to scavenge, which kind of sounds like the council may actually sell the stuff they collect rather than just bury it. But at any rate, I put out our old front-loading washing machine, which we had to replace a few weeks ago. And I took the door off, which actually I'd never thought of before. I mean, I'd always heard you take the door off fridges and freezers before you put them up. But on a front-loading wash machine, there's, of course, a good rubber seal, and there's also a really strong latch to keep the door closed. And I thought, you know, if some little kid were to, very little kid, admittedly, were to crawl into that and another were to close the door, they'd never be able to get out. So when I was driving around, I'd seen that other people had done this. They'd taken the door off, so I did too. And it wasn't even a day later. It was a few hours later. I was back up at the top of the street and noticed that somebody had taken the wash machine but left the door. So that suggests to me that they probably wanted it for the scrap metal and maybe some spare parts. But because it was taken, I could put more stuff up there. Each house is limited to 1 cubic meter. So I was finally able to get rid of a lot of the styrofoam that's been piling up around here, because that's the sort of stuff you just... How else are you going to get rid of that? I mean, it's too big to put in rubbish bags a lot of times. And anyway, I was glad to be rid of the stuff. Which actually brings me to my first topic, which is climate change. Now, I've written about it on my blog from time to time, amrins.blogspot.com, and mostly from the political side. If you're really interested, you can go there and check under the tag environment, which is what most of the posts are tagged with. Not all of them, probably, but a good chunk of them. This past Thursday, the New Zealand government introduced the first parts of its plan for a mandatory carbon trading system. Businesses that produce greenhouse gases will have to purchase credits, while those that don't can sell them. It means that the prices for things, taking things to the tip, called dump in America, that's right, will go up. And the price of rubbish bags will rise by about 10 cents, and electricity and petrol will cost more over time, with the government planning some sort of aid to the poorer people to offset their increased costs of living. Now, this plan hasn't pleased everybody. The Greens, of all people, aren't totally happy with the plan because they feel that offering subsidies defeats the whole purpose because it gives individuals no incentive to reduce their energy use or produce less refuse and so on. And they'd rather that poor people got home insulation and cleaner heating methods. The government says they're also looking at that, but we'll see. But the Greens are also unhappy that agriculture, which accounts for half of the country's greenhouse gas emissions, is exempt for several years. But a few years ago, the government looked at some sort of levy to deal with the amount of methane that comes from particularly dairy cattle, which is actually the country's largest single source of greenhouse gases. And the National Party and the right-wing politicians in particular latched onto that, and they called it the fart tax, and managed to get the whole thing dropped. So that's why the government is being very cautious about making the agricultural sector last to have to comply. And it's not just a political measure, it's also an economic one, because the agricultural sector in general accounts for most of the country's exports. So it makes sense to go slow rather than trying to screw it up. As it happens, the Conservative National Party supports at least some of the plan, and actually there are like a lot of similar parties in the world, like the Conservative Party in Britain, for example, who have adopted climate change as an issue. But business, which always seems to want things entirely their way, has warned that adopting any sort of mandatory system before our trading partners could place too many burdens on New Zealand business and make them even less competitive in the world economy. Well, not for the first time. I think they're being incredibly short-sighted. The current government's goal is to make New Zealand the world's first sustainable national economy, which means it'd be carbon neutral and with an overall positive impact on the planet. Now, if New Zealand businesses are certified carbon neutral, it would be an incredible competitive advantage, and it would only help advance brand New Zealand. And, of course, that would benefit all businesses. But it would also go a long way toward combating some of the propaganda around the so-called food miles. Now, that's a huge topic in itself. It's too big to include in this episode. But basically, as I see it, it's not as simple as local good, foreign bad. Sometimes a foreign product can be produced with far less environmental impact than a locally produced one, even allowing for shipping. Now, a lot of very well-meaning people on the left, and in the environmental movement in particular, promote food miles as a useful measure, but all too often it comes across as downright imperialist, and I'll try to explain why. Recently, Neil Young was speaking to the Farm Aid benefit and condemned imported tomatoes, saying that we, whoever we are, should help countries grow food at home. Now, many small agricultural nations, and that includes New Zealand, by the way, depend on exporting agricultural produce for their survival. Telling these sorts of countries to basically keep their food products would mean collapse of those economies. So to many countries, this comes across as the U.S. saying, we're entitled to all the benefits of a modern global economy and all of the things that money can buy, but you people in other countries, go back to being subsistence farmers living in mud huts. Now, I know that that's not what they mean to say, but you have to understand that when people in America talk about not permitting the importing of foreign agricultural products or food or what have you, it comes across as arrogant and imperialist because they don't fight the exporting of American agricultural products with nearly the same amount of energy. And all too often, it's playing into the hands of the large corporate farmers who don't want foreign competition. Well, actually, they don't want any competition. Now, keep in mind that nowadays most farming in America is done by big corporations and the small independent farmer is fading away rapidly. But however the farming is done, no country could get away with blatantly banning foreign agricultural produce. However, if the farming corporations can convince well-meaning people that food miles is always legitimate, they could kill off competition without ever having to get Congress to impose illegal trade barriers. Now, the solution, it seems to me, is a credible, verifiable method for determining the carbon footprint of various products and letting people freely decide for themselves without self-interested interference by politicians or corporations. New Zealand is taking the first step towards implementing such a system on a national basis. And once it's fully in place, I think it'll be interesting to see how New Zealand products really compare with those of other countries. And it'll also be interesting to see who resists having a verifiable method of measuring carbon footprints, because those are the people who are more than likely going to be the biggest losers. Now, for something a bit lighter, back in episode 33, I talked about the religious right in New Zealand and about how unlikely it was that the religious right would win many votes. Well, a new right-wing Christian party was announced, rising out of the ashes of a failed right-wing Christian party, and it was going to be led by that party's leader, and the co-leader was going to be a dopey right-wing MP, and it was also going to have the involvement of another MP who's facing allegations of bribery and corruption. Well, the dopey MP, the dopey right-wing MP, didn't know that he was going to be a co-leader. He thought he was going to be a leader by himself, so he didn't like that. Now, he says, he can't work with the leader of the failed party, and he's going to go ahead with forming his own party that the other guy can take part in. So, one day, we had a really questionable mix of folks screw up the announcement of their own party, only to have the whole thing collapse the next day. And that's another of the many reasons why we don't have politically powerful fundamentalists in New Zealand. There's another issue in the news, where New Zealand has been part of an international debate. Recently, after 20 years of negotiations, the United Nations passed a resolution on the rights of indigenous peoples. Four countries voted against it: the United States, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. Now, what those four countries have in common is that their populations are mainly descended from European people, and they're all struggling to deal with balancing the rights of their majority populations with the rights of their indigenous populations. Canada's UN ambassador told the General Assembly, this is a direct quote, "The provisions in the Declaration on Lands, Territories, and Resources are overly broad, unclear, and capable of a wide variety of interpretations." Australia objected to the apparent elevation of customary law to equal footing with national law. The four opponents were particularly worried about the section on land ownership, and I have a quote, I have that quote as well. It's, quote, "Indigenous peoples have the right to the lands, territories, and resources which they have traditionally owned, occupied, or otherwise used or acquired," close quote. The countries are worried that since they were all settled, legally or not, but at the expense of the original inhabitants, the territorial integrity of the countries could be compromised. Put another way, modern nations might be broken up. There was a clause that was added that said that nothing could authorize, again quoting, "any action which would dismember or impair, totally or in part, the territorial integrity or political unity of a country." The fact that the measure was non-binding doesn't really matter, because the resolution could form a legal precedent in countries that value international law and treaties, like New Zealand does. So the New Zealand ambassador to the UN described the measure as aspirational, to make clear that this country doesn't see it as part of an international law. New Zealand, of course, has its own internal process for dealing with historic grievances, and successive governments have been slowly working through that process. So, in that sense, New Zealand doesn't need the UN telling it what to do. I think that addressing the real issues that indigenous peoples face is important, and it would be great to be able to do that with international cooperation, but no country is going to dismember itself over historic wrongs, and no country wants to be told what to do. Actually, many countries complain that the UN spends a lot of time, energy, and money talking and preaching, and not all of those countries with complaints are tin pot dictatorships either. Which suggests to me that the UN has structural problems to overcome if it's ever to live up to its potential. Of course, people on the left, and indigenous rights campaigners in particular, complained loudly about the four nations that voted against the resolution, but I think it's important to remember that those four countries are filled with people, indigenous and non-indigenous alike, who all have rights that have to be considered. And I wonder, how many generations does a family have to be in a country before the descendants are native? You know, I once heard an indigenous rights campaigner saying that her country was her people's only home, and that people of European descent had someplace else. And I thought, what a load of bullshit. Now, my ancestors were from maybe half a dozen European countries, and none of those countries would let me live there as a native. In my case, I consider the U.S. to be my native land. It's the place I belong by birthright, while New Zealand is the place I belong by mutual consent, you could say. My first full year in New Zealand was a census year. They're done every 5 years. And when I saw the question that asked ethnicity, I put American, because it seemed to me that after all those generations, it was all that mattered. Now, there are plenty of people who would argue with me about that, but in a world filled with intermarriages and international relations of the most intimate kind, does nationality and ethnicity mean anything like what it used to? Well, of course it does. If you're Hispanic in America, or Asian in New Zealand, or Aboriginal in Australia, or Muslim in almost any country, you know, people care very much about your ethnic and native status. I think we're a long way from any sort of world without borders, but I think there's one important way that we could all move forward, and that would be to look at people as individuals, and to judge them, as Dr. King said, by the content of their character. Well, until we can stop being so hung up about the number of hyphens in our identities, you know, like German-American or gay New Zealander or whatever, I just don't think we've got much hope of ending wars and conflicts, and will continue to need the United Nations, despite its many flaws. Right, and now it's time for comments. Now, because I don't have internet access at the moment, I have no way of knowing if there have been any additional comments left either on my main blog, emrinds.blogspot.com, or over at the Podomatic site, so I can only go by what was left up until Wednesday, when I made my last recording that I ended up not posting, that one. And that's because Blogger sends me emails with the text of comments, and so I actually have those on my computer, and I don't need internet access for that, if you're following all that. So the first comment was from Eric from Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankee Land, who said, "Finally updated my podcast list and downloaded a few episodes of the old Amarins. You have a great radio voice," in quotes, "and it's such an easy podcast to listen to. Thanks for making my daily podcast roster grow ever more bloated." And I said, "Thanks for the kind comments. You've helped to bloat my pod list too. But then I only listen to podcasts I really like, which is why yours is now listed on my blog under Parade of Podcasts." I first heard about Eric's podcast on Mike Hipp's podcastsoup.net, and that's where I've heard of so many other podcasts, new podcasts that have come along. Mike has a little summary of them, and I think, well, that sounds interesting. And this has happened far too many times now. Mike has got to stop listening to new podcasts. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. As I've said before, I find podcastsoup.net an incredibly valuable resource to discover new podcasts, to keep up with the podcasts that I don't have time to listen to sometimes. And sometimes it's helped me prioritize. I know this sounds weird, but if there's a whole, if I'm running behind in podcasts, which I often am, a bit like Ramble Redhead, I will look at the summaries in podcastsoup.net and go, "Ooh, I should listen to that one first." So I find it a very useful tool indeed. But anyway, I started listening to Eric's podcast and liked it from the beginning. So I downloaded all of them, and I've started with the most recent ones, obviously, but I've gone back to the very beginning, number one, and working my way forward. And I really like it. I mean, I like that sort of podcast anyway, but I particularly like his, and I mean, some of it, I suppose, could be because I always have an affinity for fellow preachers' kids, but I just think it's a really good podcast. And if you haven't given it a listen yet, by all means, do check it out. There obviously is a link on my blog under Parade of Podcasts, but I'll also try to remember to put a link in the show notes. Well, next up, oddly enough, was Mike Hipp, who said, "Hey, Arthur, your comments thingy says one comments. Excellent show today. Listening to Amarins is like listening to NPR New Zealand. I found the whole free trade pro-US and the Canadian Prime Minister in Australia talking about 9/11 thing just fascinating." And I said, "I noticed that too and thought it was funny, though I'm pretty sure Blogger didn't used to say that. What we're talking about is on my blog and others. The first person who posts a comment, afterwards it says one comments, plural. And I first noticed this on a friend's blog and thought it was hilarious. I have to say, I'm easily amused. But I'm pretty sure it didn't always used to say that. Now, maybe somebody with a better memory than me can say, but I think that's a relatively recent thing, and I'm not quite sure why. But anyway, I went on. Geez, Mike, that's about the nicest thing anyone said about my podcast yet, especially since that's the sort of thing I'd like to be doing more consistently." And I would. And I have a lot of things, obviously, that I that I talk about in this podcast sometimes about me and what's going on with me, about my reactions to New Zealand. But I also talk about larger issues, either about things going on specifically in New Zealand, so you can kind of get an idea of what it's like here, or it might be about this region, or it might be about looking back towards the U.S., or things like that. Generally speaking, I don't just talk about news in general, and I don't necessarily talk about even politics in America in general, because there are plenty of other podcasts who do that. What I try to do is stick to what they call my point of difference and talk about the things that relate to New Zealand or my experience of it in some way or other. So the NPR analogy, although somewhat tongue-in-cheek, no doubt, is nevertheless the kind of direction I'm going in, or trying to go in, to talk about the sorts of things that you won't hear anywhere else, essentially. And finally, as far as I know, was Archer, who said, "So glad you enjoyed the video. Thank you for the idea. I want you to do a video soon. I think you should show us how you empty crumbs from a toaster in New Zealand. Is it any different? Hehehe. I have an idea for another video next week. Stay tuned." And I said, "We empty the crumbs in the opposite direction, of course. Still working on learning to use the video camera, so a video may be delayed a bit." And the other video that Archer mentioned he has since put up, where he gave a tour of his fridge or his beverage dispenser, whatever you want to call it. And it's actually this whole growing series of these videos now. I mean, Tim Carmel did one about doing laundry, and Will Raddick would have demonstrated how to clean his toaster, except he doesn't have one, and it's just going on and on and on. So I suppose at some stage I'll have to join in, but yeah, we'll see. Now, there were actually a couple more points about episode 39 that I wanted to mention. You may have noticed that episode 39 started, and then about 3 minutes into it, it restarted. And the reason for that is some sort of quirk, I think, in Podomatic, which, here's what happened. I started to upload episode 39, and then I thought I made a mistake that I had to fix, so I stopped it, went and did what I needed to do, and I went to upload. Now, in my experience in normal computering, if you start to copy a file to another location and you stop it, the file goes away. Well, that's not the case with Podomatic. What happened was that it started uploading, stopped, and then when I started uploading again, the file had obviously had the exact same name, and it just added on to it. Now, I don't think it should happen that way. I think that it should either ask you if you want to overwrite it, if you want to add it on, or whatever. It shouldn't just automatically assume you want to add it on. I found out about it after I downloaded and I listened and go, what's going on here? But by that time I thought, oh, well, there's not much I can do about it. And I got an email from Daniel at Callbox 7 who was asking me and Eric from Confessions of a Southern Born Yankee Land about why our podcasts restarted. So I emailed back saying, well, this is what I'd done. And Eric said that that is pretty much what happened to him as well. So now that we're aware of it, you know, it's something that I can deal with. And that's also why I didn't try to re-upload the original episode 40. I've since actually deleted it from Podomatic when I briefly had access. And in future, if I ever decide that I have to re-upload a file for whatever reason, I'll delete whatever's there. So you won't have that happening again. But that's why that happened. Now, episode 39 was also recorded at night, which I do very rarely. I usually record in the daytime and usually in the early afternoon. So I had, was, to me anyway, I was obviously subdued. And I don't know why that was. I wasn't particularly tired, and I hadn't had any wine or anything. But it's like when it gets dark, I have to use my nighttime voice or something. I don't know what it is, but it's just very strange, and I've noticed that before. I wonder if anybody else has had that experience, but I don't know. One more thing about episode 39. Towards the end of that episode, I said something. Well, actually, I'm just going to play you exactly what I said. The post is called IMAX Spell, and I think you're going to want to take a look at it. I mean, you're going to want to take a look at it. You'll see. Okay, well, maybe I was a bit too cryptic when I recorded that, because, as far as I know, since I haven't been able to check the blog lately, nobody got what it was I was trying to say. So if you go to IMAX Spell, a post called IMAX Spell, you'll see that at the top of it is a photo of me that I took with the EyeSight camera. It is, in fact, the first photo of myself I've ever posted on my blog. So if you want to see what I look like, you're going to have to go look for that blog post. And since time has passed and it may have been pushed down off the main screen, you might have to go to the recent posts section on the right-hand side of the blog to find it. But if you're really curious, that's the only way you're going to find it now, and I think it's suitable punishment for not noticing in the first place. Now, at the moment, there is no new poll on my blog because I have no internet access, and I, at this stage, have no idea what my next poll will be, or when it will be, or even when I'm going to be able to post show notes. But the old poll, the poll that, well, it's still there, was about the podcast and whether I wanted it, whether you preferred it segmented with time index and all those sorts of things. And the results, well, you can see for yourself, but I believe it was 8 people from memory who voted in the poll. Thank you, everyone. And the consensus was they either preferred it free-flowing with no segments or anything, or it didn't have a preference at all, which essentially means that people want me to do what I want to do, I think. But in general, the no segment camp had the majority. So that's pretty much what I'm going to do. You may have noticed there was a music break between the first part of the podcast and the comments, and that is mostly because when I recorded that part and this part, although I've recorded them both on the same day, I wasn't sure if I might add something later to give an update or whatever, and it would be easier for me to edit with a music bridge in between the two. Well, actually, to be easier as separate segments, and having a music bridge just makes it easier to match up. That's what the real story is. So that is pretty much what is going on. I'm fine, Nigel's fine, everybody's fine, well, apart from this late winter cold, and apart from our internet. But that's why I haven't been podcasting. You now know the whole long story. And also gone over a few things that have been in the news lately, and hope to be doing that again soon, maybe, if the gods of the internet permit. I hope to be back on Friday, probably. I probably won't have time to do one on Tuesday, which is obviously a normal day, so I'm probably going to wait until Friday or the end of the week at some point, but we'll see. On Monday night, tomorrow night, we're going to see Randy Crawford in concert at the Civic Theater, which is sort of an old, ornate cinema palace that was restored a few years ago, and it's a lovely old-looking venue now, but it's a really great place to see a show or a concert or what have you. But that's it for this long-delayed edition. Go ahead and leave me a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. I have no idea when I'll be able to read any of those, but that shouldn't stop you, because when I get back, I will be able to read it. I'll be pleasantly surprised at how many comments are there. That's all for now, everybody. Have a great week, and I hope to talk to you at the end of it. Bye.